Hey, welcome to the DeviantArt Podcast. My name is Matt Buchholz, and today we've got an awesome episode for you. You may know him from his work doing tons of meme-tastic pieces, as well as very colorful, bright, happy things. He's done Grumpy Cat as Disney princesses. He's done a terrifying Donald Duck as a griffin, and a very, very, very long Furby that has haunted my dreams and will haunt yours. But we're really excited to bring him in. We've got an awesome episode for you, so make sure to stick around. Also, give us a like down below. Subscribe to us on iTunes, because the more reviews we get there, the more people subscribing, the more sort of content we can deliver to you, the more people we can bring in. Like, we've already had in Rake, we've had in Bobby Chu, we've had in Ross Draws, all sorts of people, and you guys supporting us lets us bring in more. So without further ado, we've got Cao Shin, Eric Lee Proctor.
Yeah, I'm very excited to be here.
I can tell.
I am absolutely excited.
We've put you through the ringer this week, though.
Yeah, it's been a busy week. Yeah. I am exhausted.
So for those of you at home that may not know, we've been running an artist in residency program. And a part of that is we bring an artist in from somewhere in the world, and we have them in for an entire week at DeviantArt HQ in Los Angeles. And they make an amazing piece for us, but they also get to be a part of all of DeviantArt headquarters for that week. We've had you in meetings.
Yeah. It's been crazy. I feel like I'm a staff member here, but everything is kind of focused on what we're doing this week, and it's been wild just going out and working with you and everyone else and, seeing all the staff members here, seeing the, hype, seeing the love for the community. I'm, jazzed up.
Have you ever had a week that is dedicated purely to you?
No. This is incredible. I feel like a celebrity.
How was it with that parade on the first day? Was it a little overwhelming?
It was a little overwhelming. It's a little intimidating, but I think I'm getting used to it now.
I saw the elbows and wrists a little too snappy for what I typically...
The speed was good. You had a nice cup. It looked good. I was very impressed.
All right, producers, make sure to forward that note to those princesses we had come through. A little bit good speed, less snap.
Definitely. Elbow.
Elbow, wrist,
yes,
wrist.
Yes.
I forget the last part. Turn, something,
blow a kiss.
Yeah.
There we go. We got it. Nailed it.
Someone can fill in that middle part, the three quarters. But yeah, what was the most surprising part of being here this week?
I think it's been the energy, honestly. I mean, I already knew that the people who work here are dedicated. But seeing the excitement that goes behind it, just how every thought, every moment really goes into DeviantArt and the community, listening to that community, it's been incredible.
And I want to know, have you ever been on as much of a timeline as having to make a custom piece around a theme in 3 days?
Okay, so no, that was it was intense. I think that was the shortest amount of time that I've had to do a piece with that much detail. And there were times where I felt bad because I had basically my AirPods in. I was very focused. But at any moment, I wanted to be able to engage with people because I feel like that's really what I'm here for, is that engagement with the staff and working and then creating this piece is kind of on the side. I have had in my day job 15 people standing behind me while I storyboard for them, and this was actually more intimidating.
Okay, so I do want to get a little bit into your day job.
Yeah.
Which is not I see your art. I see Toothless, Pikachu, Grendel, and I would not expect you to have the day job that you do.
Yeah.
So why don't you give a little overview of what you can tell us of what you do?
Sure. So, yeah, that's the reaction I get from a lot of people. They just kind of see my stuff on DeviantArt, and everywhere. They kind of assume that that's my full-time job.
Right,
and
yeah.
It does say that I'm a professional artist on my DeviantArt account, so that's a fair assessment.
Fact.
Right. But that's actually my hobby work.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm actually fully employed as a conceptual illustrator.
Okay.
And the reason you don't see any of my work in my gallery is because I work for a research laboratory, and all of our work is incredibly sensitive. So it's basic research. It's research that's theoretical. It's work that doesn't have a visual. So that's where I step in. I come in and I bring the visual to research that's probably going to be fielded maybe 15 or 20 years from now.
So you're seeing the very future of the future, and you're kind of defining that.
Yes, I am the future.
You are. I love that I'm looking at you. I'm I'd buy it. this man is the future.
Yeah, it's a really incredible process because I've been working there for about 15 years. So the work that I did 15 years ago, I'm seeing now. So some of the concept illustrations that I made to kind of imagine what that technology would look like is pretty close. I feel successful that I kind of predicted what it would look like. But yeah, it's really cool.
That's pretty crazy. So I fully expect when asking you some of these questions that I won't be able to get an answer because secrecy, protection, not being able to spill secrets, NDAs.
Correct.
So is there anything you can tell us that you've worked on 15-ish years ago that you've seen now where you're like, I was pretty close on that mark?
No.
Is there anything that you can give us specific to the exact location of where you work and how many employees are there?
No.
Is there any artwork that you've created that you think will inspire, like, maybe aliens to come down and finally connect?
No.
Like, this has been a whole week where Eric's been like, I'm drawing this lovely piece, these gorgeous wolves. You guys can see it on the Artist in Residency Journal, which we'll link below. And I'm sitting there like, what does he know?
Like, they've been trying.
Yeah, we slipped him into that truth serum. We took him out for dinner. Did not budge. The polygraph test, you passed. I don't know how.
I'm rock solid.
Yeah. What's it like in the most broadest of terms in working at a place where you can never talk about what you do? Because I feel like a lot of illustrators do that on a much easier scale of like, I can't tell you what's happening in Stranger Things season 4.
Right, but eventually I can.
Yeah.
And for me, that can never comes.
Yeah.
And it's a little disappointing. It's kind of the pain that the other concept illustrators have in my field. But there's not a lot of us. So seeing their work get published, finally, if it does, it does clear it. It's really amazing. And some of my work has made it out there too. But it's generally in these like very deep research journals and doesn't usually get seen by anyone else but other researchers.
Is the community of concept artists who work in that field fairly close then? Because you guys all share that same like, what I do will never be seen sort of mentality?
I wish. Like, it was like a whole club.
Yeah.
But no, we're kind of binned because of the nature of the work. And those bins never really coalesce. And I know of them because I've seen their work. And there's a few that I have worked with. Mm-hmm. But we really kind of go in our own places.
So do you feel that because that work can never be seen, in a sense, that is what inspires you to push out so much other work as a hobby?
I mean, there's probably some truth to that. I would like to see things that I've made be seen by other people and wider audiences. But I think really what it is me going home from, you know, a full day of work and then wanting to make my own stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I really just want to make my own things. And it's not that the work that I'm doing is dry. It's just that it's not exactly what I want to do. Like, I make a lot of environments, which is awesome because that translates well to a lot of my hobby work. But I want to draw like stuff like a long Furby and have my coworkers not freak out.
How many followers did you lose from posting long Furby?
It was a lot. It was a lot, but it was worth it. It was definitely worth it. I think I lost more from the Donald Duck Griffin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell us, for people who are listening to this, a little bit about the Donald Duck Griffin, which we'll also link below. But I just want to know, like, why?
Why?
Why? I think that's the biggest question I've had.
Right.
Why?
Right. So I started in college as a biology major. I only switched halfway. So I still have a little bit of that science behind me.
I mean, if this starts with, I used to study biology and then I created a Donald Duck Griffin, I'm kind of glad you stopped biology.
No.
Because like that's the path of like most psychopaths and like mad scientists. Like that's human centipede.
You're right.
Like terrifying angles of...
I think I like that path.
I want to create a chimera.
Well, they'll only live in art. That's how they'll be prisoned.
Oh my God. They'll be prisoned?
Yeah, they're in the prisoner world of my artwork. They won't come to life.
This is terrifying. Like now, I was like, you know what? We're going to talk with Eric. He's got these beautiful, happy scenes. He's like, Toothless is a prisoner in my heart. He can never escape.
He's mine.
DreamWorks, you thought you had him. I keep him sealed away.
Oh my God. Yeah, you made that very dark very fast.
I made it that way.
Yeah, you did.
You said it was the prison they lived in.
I was trying to be fun.
No. You know what? Let's Family Feud. Top five things that are synonyms of fun. Prison? Oh, no, not on the board. <That's> one,
like, a prison of fun?
A prison of fun is like, I mean, I guess, yeah.
Like a coworker's birthday that you don't like? You can't not have fun with cake.
That is a good analogy.
You're just over there eating cake. Happy birthday. But you're still enjoying it because there's sheet cake.
Yeah, and there's like a miniature horse running around.
Exactly. You can't not have fun in that kind of prison.
Oh. Okay, let's continue back to Donald Duck as I sit over here just fearing for my life and freedom.
So yeah, I have a little bit of that research back there. I wanted to actually know what a Donald Duck Griffin would look like because anthropomorphic animals generally have, well, specifically birds, their wings are their hands. But griffins' wings are on the back, and then their bird legs are in the front, and then they have a cat back half. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was research. I nailed it.
He nailed it. Check it out. Leave comments on that deviation.
Yeah, if you're afraid, you're just afraid of science.
That heart flex. If you can handle this, you're just afraid of science.
Yeah, don't be afraid of science.
So do you find that like that creativity and that sort of like mentality of like wanting to find out more also like kind of inspired you to go in the direction of your day job of like getting to be that creative around something in a conceptual way is something that you get to do now there?
Yeah, I actually didn't plan it. It just kind of fell into my lap, but I'm finding that I really, really enjoy it because there is the exploration aspect of it. There is the conceptual part, and I really like having that control, but it's still collaborative. Mm-hmm. With the researchers, they come in, they talk about their research to a point where I need to understand. And really what I feel like is kind of that middle person, the communicator, bringing their very, very binned research to a broader audience and then collaborating with them so that that visual space matches what their ideas are and a blend of what my ideas are.
Hmm. That makes sense. It's so like, I just want to see like on my deathbed or whatever, which could be very soon, just like your work and be like, I get it now.
Well, and then, there are more Donald Duck Griffins in there.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, that's the stuff that's been cleared.
The Donald Duck Chimera Griffin has been cleared, leading me to 15 years ago, they were creating Donald Duck Griffins. Oh, no.
We're just starting to field the research for the Huey, Dewey, Louie Chimera.
Yeah, you were telling me a little bit about that dream.
Yeah.
Like a Cerebus sort of situation.
Yeah.
I can't wait to favorite that and then myself lose followers for what you posted.
You're welcome, by the way.
Hey, you gotta know who your real friends are.
Exactly.
Everyone always says, like, who would you have with you in, like, a zombie apocalypse? And it's gotta be someone who can at least handle a Huey, Dewey, Louie Cerebus.
I really appreciate that, Matt.
Yeah.
I really do, because I've often questioned what I can bring to a zombie apocalypse. Thank you.
A litmus test, if you will.
I actually took knitting, because I thought that that would be a valuable skill.
Yeah, in a zombie apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you getting the yarn from?
You know, why did you have to crush that for me? I guess I'll just spool threads of my tears.
I like the idea that, like, you take over, like, a Michaels.
Yeah.
Or Joanne's Fabrics, and you're like, this is my home.
Yeah, I will knit you the most fantastic armor.
I do think knit armor would be pretty good because the puncture through it would be very limited. Like a zombie trying to bite you
exactly.
through
it? Exactly. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I might have to launder it for the drool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it should be, like, laundry safe.
Oh. Well, yeah, you're hand washing everything.
Well, yeah.
So.
Unless you want some, like, shrink too much and come
back
to me.
Well, I mean, you're just, like, hand washing anyway because I'm assuming all electricity is gone. So you don't really have
no.
a laundromat.
I do not like this reality. I'd rather we don't explore any more of it.
Okay. Let's go to something a lot brighter.
Okay.
Your artwork.
All right.
So most of your artwork all has this like glorious glow to it, which I think is so awesome because when I create something, it's flat and boring. But all of your stuff is just filled with this life that comes out in color, it comes out in form, comes out in composition. Why do you push that sort of energy into your pieces and how?
I don't know. You know, it's one of those things where people will ask about my style, like, why do you do it that way? Sometimes I just don't have the clearest answers. And really, for me, it's just that's what I like. That's mm-hmm. my aesthetic. So generally, when I make a work, I'm making what I prefer to see. And I know that it has to be true because a lot of the work that I have that inspires me by other artists kind of have the same flavor. Mm-hmm. But I mean, when I think about it, it's probably bright and cheery just because I feel like that's my personality type. I don't know if that's coming across at all.
Well, you did want to put your art in a prison, so.
But it's a prison of fun. There's
cake. Prison
of
fun.
And the little horse.
No, I do love that you put so much joy into it and you do exude joy. Like there's just a happiness about you that is really contagious, and having you around the office this week has been amazing because everyone is a lot happier.
Okay, I'm very glad to hear you say
it's
that.
It's not just because we paid them to deal with you this week. It's
well that put some doubt in there.
No, but like you bring such a positivity to it, and like I love that in your scenes you find a way to bring like different properties together and different characters together, whether they're your OCs or things from different fandoms, where there's just a celebration happening. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, here's Pikachu, but they're wearing a hat from something else, or here's Stitch and Toothless together right. hanging out. What sort of world do you envision that all living within?
I mean, it's my world. I think that a lot of the fan art that I create generally happens because I want it to exist. So a lot of crossovers occur because of that. I would love to see like a Toothless and Stitch crossover. They were both created by the same creator, so I would love to see that blend. And so a lot of the stuff you're going to see in my artwork is the space that I would love to actually exist. Like, I would love to live in my world of artwork.
What do you think a typical day of living in your artwork would be like? You wake up. Bed is super cushiony.
Yes.
Take us from there.
You wake up, you grab your box of Skittles, pour some milk in and have breakfast. You drink your soda and step outside and you immediately have to put on your glasses because it's bright and it's probably too many rainbows and sparkles and every one of your favorite characters is there and they're all there for you.
Are they singing?
Only if there's a point where they need to tell me a plot piece.
Okay.
Yeah.
With some dedicated choreography.
Yeah. But there's always, in the morning time, that overture is going to introduce those themes to me that I'm going to hear in the rest of the day.
So this world is just, like, insane with dancing and singing and
yeah.
rainbows. And Lisa Frank just being like, this is too much.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Do you think that you've created that? Like, right now, you see, like, a lot of art and even just the world today is very much like that Christopher Nolan like grit.
Yeah.
Do you find that this is like formed in some sort of like escape or some sort of idealism or what?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the world, there's a lot of bad news all the time. And I definitely think that my goal with my artwork, at least for myself and what I'm hoping for others when they see it, is that they get a brief moment of relief. You know, that just a moment where they can look at it and smile and share it with someone else and have them smile and just share that joy.
That's really cool. What do you think that, like, what would your ideal response be to someone seeing your art?
So, you know, when you see something kind of funny, you're like, and you just kind of blow out your nose a little bit. I want them to be like slapping their nose, ha, you know, and just kind of like having to like hold their phone up to everybody. Take a look at this. I really want that.
Have you ever gotten that response from people who, because you stream a lot, so mm-hmm. people know your face, they see you at cons, they come up to you. Have you ever gotten that sort of response from people there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it's always really amazing. Like, they see my artwork, and they immediately will look at me, look back at my artwork, grab their phone, and show me that they've set it to their wallpaper, and it's been there forever. Or they'll pull their sleeve up, and they have a tattoo.
You have people who have tattoos
yeah.
of your artwork.
Yeah, they're forever fans. It's crazy.
Is that with the U, forever fans?
Forever, yes.
Is that a thing that you've established?
Yeah, it's mine now.
Okay.
Yeah, you can pay me the royalty rights for it later.
Oh, God. We need to scrap that. Put a bleep over it. We can't afford this. Oh, my God.
But, yeah, it's nuts. Like, having people come up and then they'll actually tell me that this is their favorite thing or it really made them feel great and still they've never been able to change their phone wallpaper to something else. I've had people send me messages that my artwork has helped them out of, like, a dark space in their life. And that, it's hard to not tear up when you hear something like that. That's really what I want.
Do you have any specific tales of that you'd like to tell us? Or
of people, like, getting, like, really excited?
Yeah.
Well,
let's hear one that you remember most, one that's real clear.
So there was one time when, and I want to say this because it's one of those things that I constantly say to people who watch my streams or they follow my artwork. I really want to meet people. I really do. And what I notice is a lot of people will come up and then see me and get really scared and then run off. I have actually been out adjusting the parts of my table that are in the front. And I was just kind of messing with that. And I noticed to my side that there was a person there with their friend kind of trying to push them towards me. And she was just shaking. And I was like, hey, how's it going? And she just started crying. And I felt terrible, like I failed. And I was like, oh, are you okay? And she ran away and she was gone. Like she just teleported out of there. And her friend said, I'm really sorry. She's a huge fan of yours. And she wanted to let you know that your art inspired her to start.
That's so cool.
I know, right? And I was like, oh my God, that's awesome. I really wish she could come back. And I really love to sit down and talk to her because that's an amazing adventure.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she never came back.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so that's something, and I've noticed that a couple of times, people coming up and then just really getting afraid. And I get that. Like, if I have a big artist that I know and they're at a convention and I've never met them before, I don't know how to handle myself. I'm like your art's work, so I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I love your art, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. But yeah, I wish people could. I mean, I get it. It's you get your nerves, and if it's someone that you really look up to, you don't want to be like, you know, and just don't know what to do.
Who have you ever been that starstruck about that you've gotten to meet, or that you've shuddered and then teleported away from?
Devin.
Devin?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you get to meet Devin today.
I know. I'm so excited. I'm so nervous.
We'll film it for you guys. We'll see if he's shaking, like, just like hypothermia.
I'm gonna just start crying and I'm gonna run away. Devin is someone I've really looked up to.
Oh, Devin's so cool. Yeah. I mean, you guys probably heard her on the podcast earlier. Tamborella is just amazing and one of the nicest people. So you'll have the exact same response from her that I'm sure you would have had to this person. Like,
okay.
She's so genuine and sweet that, like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been at the same conventions together, and I have not been able to work up the courage to go over and talk to her.
Well, that's cool. I'm stoked that you get to meet Devin today because, seriously, she's so cool, so chill. What is a tip, then, that you would give fans of yours that maybe are listening to this right now that have never been able to talk to you because they're terrified to meet you? What's, like, a code word they can give you to give you the whole breakdown of, like, I'm too nervous, and then they're like, celery or something.
Celery.
A safe word to, like, let you know to ease them in.
I guess you can just say, I saw you on the DeviantArt podcast.
Oh, that's a good way.
And I'd like to talk to you.
Why don't you cut a promo to camera of how of introducing yourself as someone that can be approached at cons?
So, I saw you on the DeviantArt podcast, which is fantastic, by the way. And everyone should watch, like, subscribe. Listen to.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I like how you went with that.
Click that bell.
And you can also go up to Eric's table at a convention and just say hi.
Yeah, just say all of that. No, I won't talk to you unless you say all of that.
You have to show on your phone where you've subscribed to the DeviantArt podcast
as proof
before you can talk to Eric at cons.
No, for real. Just come up and talk. I'm a totally normal person, except for the weird Donald Duck Griffin stuff. You're fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a joy having you here this week because you've been, like, on DA for a while. You've seen some changes.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like when you first joined DeviantArt?
Well, I'd say, like, when I first joined, because my account's 16 years old.
Your account is 16 years
old?
Yeah,
sweet 16.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What's 16?
Yeah, my DeviantArt account now has its own driver's license.
I mean, it's weird you say that because we've actually brought in a real 16-year-old. A 16-year-old version of your page just so that you can figure out what that's like.
Yeah. They hate me.
Your page hates you?
Yeah.
I mean, they took the flight.
They took the moody teenager route.
Well, we've brought them in. So here is your 16-year-old page.
What?
Introducing.
So this is my DeviantArt profile. Oh my God.
My name is Paige. I have 114.9K watchers. So let's get that up to 116 because it's my sweet 16.
Wow, like a real teenager, I feel like I don't know you very well.
Everyone knows you like Grendel more than me.
Oh, okay.
Oh my God, it's getting real. Do you love your cat more than you love your DeviantArt page?
That's a really unfair question.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. I'm gonna cop out and say I love both equally.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. She knows.
What was it like meeting your page?
It's exactly like I thought. Like, wow, is this what my page really is?
What if your page was really like that?
I mean, it's my page. I have to love everything about them.
What would you say is the part of your page that, like, 16 years old, you started, did you ever resent any part of your page?
I think that early stuff I was starting to resent a little bit. That whole, like, original character phase where it's really just a self-insert and you're super moody.
Yeah?
Yeah, that part of it.
What would you say was the most early Eric piece that you posted to DeviantArt?
So I started off with Oikaki.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a pretty old program now. It's like
For people who don't know Oikaki,
yeah,
give
the
breakdown.
It's this, I think it was a Java applet you just drew into a web page, and it was like on there for moments, yeah, with your mouse, pixel by pixel. It was rough. It was probably a step up from Microsoft Paint.
Yeah, and that's a very small step. That's one of those steps where they have to put the warning, like slight uneven floor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're definitely seeing the silhouette of the guy like falling off. Yeah, and it's only like yay high. But yeah, it is a pretty tough program to paint in. And so my earliest work are my going into the Oikaki, saving them, and then needing a place to like actually have a gallery of the work I did, because when you made like an Oikaki thing, it would be on there for like a day and then just fall off of the fifth page or whatever, how far they went. And so your work was lost forever. And I mean, that's neat in a sort of neat, weird way. But I really wanted to save my work and then show it for longer than a day or two. So DeviantArt was that first place where I went to. And I was like, all right, cool. I can actually put all my work here.
And then you just kept going.
I just kept going.
Your artwork went from Oikaki to... you actually have like a traditional art background.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever put any of those pieces up?
No. So unfortunately, when I graduated, because I did graduate doing traditional painting, I didn't keep anything or take any photos of them. And then I moved away from my home in Olympia, Washington to Maryland, and I didn't bring any of it either. And then found out that my parents like to do this thing where they're like, you didn't need that, right?
Oh.
So it's in a garbage somewhere. I have no idea.
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah.
Your parents threw away not only your supplies, but also the art?
Yeah. Because I don't live there, so why should it stick around? It's not paying rent.
Oh, my God. This explains so much about how you treated your page.
Okay, yes. I can see that I have become my parents.
I can't believe they threw away your artwork. Like,
yeah,
I think that I still get like posts from my mom who's like, just looking at this one. And it's like, we were at a Chili's and I like drew a face on the napkin.
I think I grew up with parents, well, my mom especially, who didn't really want me to become an artist. So it was an uphill battle.
Well, so how did that shape you becoming an artist then?
Well, it was tough. She really wanted me to pursue something in medicine or therapy, something that, as she would put it, is more solid career-wise, and art really just kind of scared her. I grew up playing the violin, and that was really my main focus.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to school. I mentioned that I went in for biology, but through that whole time, I just could not stop drawing. It always found a way to come up. Like, if I had downtime, if I just wasn't doing anything, I wasn't practicing, or I wasn't busy with school, I would draw. And even without any encouragement, it just kept happening. It was the thing I really loved. I started making fan art, like of Animaniacs stuff, like way back when. And I really loved every animated film as I grew up. It was, I mean, I think I wore out my VHS tapes. Remember those?
Do I ever? Laserdiscs.
Huh? But yeah, she didn't really want to nurture that because her intent was that she was trying to protect me from failure. But it didn't matter. That drive inside me was too strong. And so halfway through school, I just flipped that. And she was pretty upset. She really thought that if that's truly, truly what I wanted, I should have gone to an art school. And it was too late. And it didn't matter. I was really driven, and I really, really wanted to do artwork. And I'm so glad. It was very scary. I had to meet with my advisors. I had to meet with, you know, people. Are you sure you want to do this? You know, that's a pretty big jump. None of your credits are going to transfer. And I was like, yeah, I have to do this. I think it's too true. Too true in my life that I can't ignore it anymore.
Did that affect your relationship with your parents pretty strongly
it
during
did.
That time?
It did. During that time, they were pretty adamant that I didn't come home in the summer. And so they wanted to make sure that I knew how to be responsible with this really big change that I just made. And so they said, you need to figure out how to make that work. And it meant being in school for another semester and finding jobs to pay for that extra semester and pay the rest of the way through school. But I did it. It was hard. It was really, really hard. But I'm so glad I did. I can't imagine what my life would be like if it wasn't something in art.
Do you feel that like extra stress and that like real intensity around that drove you to work even harder towards your art?
I think it did. I have a little bit of a competitiveness with myself. I set these really high goals, and I really push myself to go there. And I know what the balance is that I've kind of needed to strike for that, because with violin, I pushed myself so hard that all of the competitiveness, all the practice, all the work I put into it actually took the joy from it. I actually cannot play violin now without feeling like I'm just constantly being judged, even if it's just for a friend, even if it's just for myself. So now when I look at it, I have all this anger, and I just don't feel joy there anymore. And so I told myself, I can push myself and I can have good goals, but I have to have a good balance. That if I feel like I'm starting to resent what I'm doing or feel stressed by it, that I need to step back. I need to basically tell myself to take a break, maybe even walk away for a couple of days, maybe even a week. I've taken a whole month from art just to recalibrate and get back to a new style or see it with new eyes. It's really helped.
What are some steps that you think that artists who might be pushing themselves too hard can like really identify? Because sometimes you're in too deep and
yeah,
you don't know.
Definitely.
But what are some like things that they can look out for before they get too far?
Yeah, I mean the first clue is your body. If your arms or your back and neck are hurting, it's probably time to stop for a little bit. And I've seen artists work their bodies so hard that they've actually permanently damaged their arms and they cannot draw the way they want. And that's so sad. I mean, those are the first signs. And then, of course, fatigue. If you start getting angry with the process and getting mad at what's happening on the page, the joy isn't there. And I think it needs to be there. There's a healthy balance between, all right, I'm driven to finish this, versus, I want this to be done, you know, that kind of thing. And I get it. There's times where I'm at the end of a piece and I'm just like, I need to finish this, you know, and you kind of get that like burnout in each piece. And so what I've found helps me is to kind of juggle pieces. So I'll have like maybe four or five. So I never really get like burned on one and then get mad about it. So if I start feeling stressed or kind of having some anxiety about it, I'll flip to a new one.
And how, like now that you are set in a great position where you're making a living with your art, and you're also being able to kind of celebrate your art and have your good time with art. How is that with your parents now? Are they happy to see you secure? Are they like,
I think,
do they understand?
So this is a stereotype.
Okay.
Okay. But I am half Korean. My mom is Korean. I don't know that I can ever please her. She's happy with what I'm doing, but I can always do a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I show them the stuff that I have done, they've always been like excited for me. But I think now the artwork realm, that it's not a physical painting, so it's not quite what they understand now.
Traditional art and digital art, that can be a real tough thing. You see a lot of people who do traditional art not feeling represented online, a lot of people that do digital art trying to show the work that they put in has similar value. How do you see that? Like, how do you perceive like the differences and the strengths of each?
Well, I definitely see that, especially when I started digital painting. It was kind of newer.
Well, yeah, with Oikaki. Like, yeah, that's, it was about very as fresh new. As it gets.
And there was some beef, I think, between the two worlds. But I don't know that that should exist, and I don't know that it exists that same way. I definitely don't see people kind of on either. But as a traditional painter, when I'm digital painting, it doesn't feel too different. I mean, sure, it doesn't cost as much because I don't have to buy a canvas. I don't have to buy paint, which is awesome. But it feels pretty much the same because despite whatever you're doing, the workflow itself is the same. So how I would blend colors, how I would establish shadow and light and all of that is the same workflow that I would have with my digital work. So I'm not sure that it's one is better than the other or it's different or whatever. I think that both have this uniqueness to it. I mean, traditional definitely has the feeling of being tactile. Seeing a traditional piece in actuality when you're standing in front of it has that whoa factor to it because you can really see the spaces that the artist created physically and the surface of the paint. And then digital, of course, it does not have that unless you're using a program that sort of emulates that. I'm not sure that it's quite the same yet, but it's getting there. And with digital, it's this... for me, at least, it's got this space that I can create where I don't feel so... I feel like mixing paint can be somewhat inhibiting, and I get lazier with it. But with digital, I can just explore an entire palette without worrying about color matching or mixing that paint color, getting really high saturation. And then I really like the undo feature of digital painting.
You like the undo feature, but you also work in one layer.
Yes, I do.
Which is for those of you who work in digital art, I'm sure you have hundreds and hundreds of layers like me, all titled layer 1, layer 2, layer 560, but, you know, real organized. But, like, working in one layer is insanity.
Nuts. Yeah, it's nuts.
Do you know anyone else that works in one layer?
No, I don't, actually.
For good reason. That is a horrible choice. It was like watching a tightrope walker when you were streaming. Because it's like, oh, God, he's painting stars. He painted stars over the wolves. Oh, God, they're there.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's because I'm a traditional painter in my background. You really have one layer. And I also have a tendency to fiddle around with details too much if there are too many layers. When I first started digital painting, I actually had tons of layers, hundreds upon hundreds, clipping masks, groups. And what I would find is that the final did not feel very organic. It felt like I was just piecing together parts of paintings in a composition that worked. And that looks good for a lot of people. But for me, it did not feel like my traditional work, that where lines meet, they kind of blend instead of having a hard edge. And that's something I wanted to carry into digital painting a lot because that's how I painted. So I don't have the ability to do that quite the same way if I have things on separate layers. And if I merge everything down, if I make a mistake, then I kind of have to work with the paint that's already established. And I like the look that it gives. It gives it a kind of a fuzzy edge look. It's soft. And it helps me not focus on what could I do, what if, and maybe I can go back to this version. I have to commit. I have to commit.
I'm still just like, like when you say this, I'm like, I can hear what he's saying. I just can't believe it. So I want to jump back just a bit, and I'm sorry for looping us all over, but you were talking a little bit earlier about like in museums with traditional paintings, and there, I feel like, at least when I'm online, I see a lot of like kind of stigma around digital art in the sense that like when you create a traditional piece, you're creating one piece. But there's the whole process of taking digital art from the computer to print that kind of makes it so that you can make infinite.
Right.
How do you see that, or how does that affect your work
as
someone who works a lot in digital now?
So I do go to conventions and sell my work. And the kind of eyebrow raising kind of judgment side eye I get is, are these all original? I'm like, well, they're my original works, but you draw them on a computer, you know, and I kind of get that, all right. You know, I got the judgment there. You know, they want something unique, and I get that. Traditional work, as you've mentioned, is something that's one-off. If I make a painting, that's generally the only one. You can't, I mean, you can take a photo and make prints of it, but only one person's going to own the actual painting. And that makes that special, and I totally understand that. And in that way, when I make a traditional painting for someone, that price is going to go way up. But with digital painting, if I'm making prints, I don't know that that really means that it's enjoyed less. I definitely think that seeing a print of a digital work is amazing. You can see it, such great detail in a digital print that the artist that's making it can generally see, that's zooming in and out. And when you see it on a computer monitor, you don't really get that same experience that you would in an art print. And you're also, I mean, for me at least, I sell my own prints, so you're having to buy them from me, you know, so I have the opportunity to sign it for you or talk to you. It's an exchange where you got to meet that artist, and then when you put it up in your house, hopefully you're like, I bought this from Eric. And that should feel a little bit of pride in the same way that owning a traditional piece would have.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of like limited runs on prints, mm-hmm. and like a lot of ways where I feel that in some cases, digital art is still trying to find a way to fit mm-hmm. that same thing, because for some people it is that collector's mentality, which is very interesting, because you know, there are people who just enjoy art or enjoy it for, like you said, the reason of connecting with that artist, supporting that artist. And then there are people who are like, I need this thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very intriguing.
Yeah. I've had both types, you know, people who have seen me convention, the same convention year after year, and anything new I have, they will buy. And it's that sort of collector mentality that they have. And I've had people come up and they're like, oh, I, and you can see they're pulling their wallet out right away. I need that. I need it. And they don't, they're like, how much is it? Here you go. And that always makes me feel like really happy that they just got so, it goes back to that joy. And it makes me feel really, really successful if somebody can smile and want my work that bad.
So something that you've been delving into recently, like you started off creating a lot of art for fun and that joy of properties that you really enjoyed, but now you're getting more and more into your own original characters and building your own pieces. What inspired that like change? What directed you in that way?
Well, you're right. I have been doing a lot of kind of the joy, fun, fan art stuff, and I love celebrating fandoms with people.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely, because you get people like super excited about the thing you're excited about, and that's really special. I really think it's great. But at this point now, what I want to do is be able to create some original work. That way that sort of like this idea where the next year, so 2020 for me, is going to be spent creating original characters, original pieces. And at the end of the year, what I want to do is kind of put them all in one big art book. And then all the pieces that I made this year will then next year flow into a plan that I have for a children's book with those characters.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. Have you thought of the storyline for the children's book?
You've already
got it set.
I've got it. I've written it. It's about 80% there. So I want to do the words first. And then all of the visuals are going to come second.
That's excellent. It's been interesting because through interviewing people, we've seen a lot of people really going in that direction of like, this is the year, 2020 is when mm-hmm. I'm really knocking out me, which is so cool. Like we were talking with Ross from Ross Draws, and he's got his Nima book coming out this mm-hmm. year. We've just seen like a lot of people really start focusing on themselves. What do you think for like an artist who's out there right now who's enjoying creating fan content and feels like, what can I do to like show myself? What sort of tips could you give them as someone who's pursuing that and has been really successful with like Grendel and all your other mm-hmm. characters based on your cats right. that I love?
Well,
like what would you tell them to like start making those steps towards creating more original content?
Well, definitely it's a good piece of advice, because I think what generally happens is you'll make a piece of fan art and the fandom will blow up. They'll love it because they're celebrating the thing they like. And it's a little easy to get trapped into the idea that like, oh, I should make more because then I'll have more people come and take a look at it. And I think the healthy thing to do here is to make sure you have a blend of what you want to do for yourself versus how much you're kind of responding to that hype that you're getting from your fan work. And so don't don't stifle your own characters. You know, I tried to start my Grendel and Rivers characters kind of early on, and so they could sit side by side with my fan work. And now I think I'm kind of at a artistic maturity level with them that I can kind of take off now. And so my advice is to start early, make your characters, start building a foundation for them, and do not betray your own joy in your art for the sake of views.
That's a good call. I think that you really hit kind of something special there where you don't want to get trapped just being like the person who does this,
right,
this one fan art thing. Because like as you grow from there, if you get too set in that,
mm-hmm,
you're just that person forever.
Right. I mean, I learned that lesson a little bit with the Grumpy Cat Disney Princess series because I was having a lot of fun having fun with other people that were having fun with me with this series.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've had maybe 8 or 9 of them, and people were like, are you going to do this movie? Are you going to do this movie? When are you going to do this one? But around the 9 or 10 mark, I was like, I'm done. This was a good thing, and I liked where it went, but I'm done.
Knowing to end a run.
Yeah, because now I want to do something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I think that we're wrapping up on our time right now. It flew by really fast.
Yeah, it did. Really fast.
But I can smell lunch.
Yeah, I'm getting hungry.
But thank you so much for joining us. Like,
yeah, thank you for having me.
And everyone, please make sure to follow Eric on DeviantArt, deviantart.com/Saoshin. And make sure to like this video, leave a comment, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Please do that. That helps us get discovered so that we can make more of these podcasts and share them with more people, bring more artists in. And thank you for watching. Bye.